Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Toto Africa, Play Africa. That's what we're doing here on the Pride of Detroit POD cast. Welcome back into the pit. Welcome to the jungle, as a bunch of very old, very annoying Gen Xers and boomers would say, still thinking that that song is cool. It is not. Stop playing it. Banish it forever. Play Toto's Africa instead. Or as I picked in the song of the week, play Oh Yeah by Yellow. Another classic song that was completely ruined by placing it in Ferris Bueller's Day Off with two guys ogling a restored Ferrari, which is incredibly lame. So lame. I'm Christopher Fett, the adequate host at Christopher Fett, P-E-R-F-E-T-T. It's lame. No one, like, if you're getting that souped up about a damn Ferrari, you're lame. You gotta do better things with your life. Muscle cars. Jeremy Reisman is there, the fearless leader at Detroit Online, and Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock guy. At Ryan underscore POD. Oh boy, we've got a lot to talk about today.
Do we?
It's Victory Monday. It's Victory Monday, baby.
First Victory Monday of the season. It's a beautiful feeling. And a bit of a glow on this one. If the Lions went out and won, that's great. That's always great when the Lions win. They beat some team, if I'm reading this right here, they are from, let me make sure I get this right, New England. I don't know where that place is. It's probably somewhere in upstate New York. And they're usually forgettable, and no one really thinks much about them. And they have some guy named Tom Brady. Again, I think I'm reading all of this right.
Nailed it.
Anyway, no big deal. That team was just 1-1. Not like they were really that impressive to beat. Once again, the Lions beat up on a team with a losing record. And yeah. No, I mean, holy crap. Sunday Night Football, Detroit Lions 26, New England Patriots 10. Let's just get around the bullshit. Holy crap. I don't think anyone saw that coming. I picked the Lions, and Jeremy told me I had to stop hanging around with Rob Parker.
You do still.
Well, just guess what? I was out there Sunday, and I was rooting along with the Lions. So,
well, I was rooting there that way as well, and yeah, you hit nail on the head. I don't think anyone realistically predicted it. I mean, I saw plenty of people pick the Lions, but I did not see anyone give a good reason. Because there's no way explaining Sunday night's performance after what we saw all throughout the preseason and all we saw in the first 2 weeks of the season. Last week, I sat here on the podcast and told you, well, I know who this Lions team is. I can relax now and know that they're not going to be competitive in 2018 and just hope that they get a little bit better each week. Well, I'm here to tell you I was wrong. I don't know who this team is anymore.
I mean, we might as well get into narratives right now. We'll save individuals for the next one. And before I get into my point, Ryan, like what's your like first reaction to this particular outcome?
I think my initial reaction was I can't wait for everybody to count out Tom Brady again, because that's always like a fun thing that people do after
touchdown Tom.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fun thing that, you know, people do every couple years. I mean, I think the one I remember most vividly is when they lost to Kansas City in a primetime game, and they just got absolutely ran out the building in Kansas City. And then Tom Brady responded by, you know, going Super Saiyan. But yeah, from a Lions perspective, though, I think the thing that I was can we ignore it any longer? 16 carries, 101 yards.
Ah, there he is. We're going to get to our beautiful boy carry on pretty soon.
Where are my keys? Can we I want a jingle together? Keys. I want to jingle keys.
Why do you want to jingle keys? Carry. Oh, wait.
Nope. Stop being adequate. Say it with me, Jeremy. They established the run game.
Yes! Establish the running game. The Lions established the running game.
That's great. My view on this game is what I said on Toledo radio today. Like, I you know what? This is what this game was going into it. Is like, now with hindsight, I could absolutely see how the Patriots could lose this game. But in that moment, I think we were kind of swept up in, this is the Lions. They've sucked for two games, and we know who they are, as Jeremy would say. But then when analyzing the Patriots, I don't think we really did that much. We just said, oh, these are the Patriots. This is Tom Brady. They have a great record. They rarely win back-to-back games. They'll figure something out. They're going to have this circled, yada, yada, yada. And yet, if you go back and listen to our first bite with Brian Phillips, you saw how many weaknesses there were on the Patriots. And my take on this game is that this was game planned perfectly. I don't think in the long run the Lions are better than the Patriots. I don't know. Maybe they are. That would suck if New England finishes below 500, because once again, this isn't going to be a statement game for Matthew Stafford. He's going to have an awful record, as Alex Reno pointed out. On the other hand, like, New England was really bad in this game. And it stuck out to me, as great as the Lions were. Like, the Lions hit everything, every note right in this game. They hit every note right. They abused them on offense and defense on the right proper spots where they needed to. They shut down Gronkowski. They knew the Patriots had nothing on the exterior for receiving threats. And Tom Brady looked absolutely lost trying to find anyone who wasn't Gronk. And on offense, they knew that they could just pound the ball. This was the perfect game for Kerryon to get those 100 yards. This was the perfect game because they realized that front seven, garbage, basura. And you could see that. You could absolutely see that. But those huge lanes they were opening up for Blunt and Johnson. So I don't know if the Lions do that again. But damn, does it feel good to do against the Patriots.
Yeah. And yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head a couple times there. I'm with you that our conversation with Brian Phillips on First Bite started to change my mind a little bit. And, you know, the further I got into the week, the more I thought an upset was a possibility. I never would have predicted a dominant performance like this. But, you know, I argued with Brian a little bit about, you know, he said Chris Hogan is, you know, anyone can guard that guy. No. And I'm like, we'll talk on Monday and see. Chris Hogan didn't do a damn thing. Lions secondary went from looking like the possible worst in the league because they're making guys like Jimmy Garoppolo and Sam Darnold look like all pros to making Tom Brady like throw his yards per attempt, which is like 5.0, was the worst in 3 years.
He had less passing yards than the Lions had running yards.
That is mind-blowing. That is absolutely... Like, can you just say that again?
Tom Brady had 120 passing yards. The Detroit Lions on the ground between Kerryon Johnson, LeGarrette Blount, and a scamper by Matthew Stafford had 159 rushing yards. 159, for those not acquainted with math, is more than 120. I mean, technically, even if we're being generous and taking away some negative throws Brady was making too, that's 133 yards. That's still less than 159.
This game blew me away. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I assumed, like everyone, once it hit the third quarter and Stafford kicks it off with an interception, the Patriots score soon after, and suddenly it's a 3-point game. Like, okay, well, here's the part where you don't count out touching down Tom, and the Lions are going to blow everything, and it's going to be an even bigger punch to the gut. But then it's like, okay, let's just brush off those two possessions and continue to what we were doing the rest of the game, which was dominating this team on both line of scrimmages, dominating completely on offense. The only thing the Lions didn't have going for on offense was red zone offense, and that's something we can talk about a little bit later because that's still a significant problem. but passing game was working, running game was working. They were pretty much shutting down the Patriots running game, which is something we haven't seen out of this defense. And Tom Brady had all the time in the world and could not find a single open receiver all night.
Yeah, like pass rush wasn't great. Like they got to him a few times, but like pass rush wasn't great. But like you could see it. And especially you saw it when he threw that ball, what, 40 yards almost to a referee. The longest intentional grounding I've seen in a long time. Ryan, like this can't be replicable. Like what? I don't even know how this happened. I really don't. Like, and maybe I'm still looking at it and thinking, yeah, this is the Patriots. You're not supposed to do that to the Patriots when you're the Detroit Lions. Maybe that's that. I'm trying to square the circle.
Well, I mean, I don't think I can square the circle any better than you can. And I guess let me give you a little bit of a long-winded response to that question. So I didn't think it was fathomable that they could do that anyways. I actually didn't even get to watch the first half of the game because my adult ice hockey league started on Sunday nights. And thank goodness that this is the only week where the Lions had a primetime game that's going to overlap, because it's always a dread to try to, you know, go completely blacked out from scores and things like that. So I told everybody in the locker room pregame, like, nobody say the score when we get back in the locker room. I'm recording it. I don't want to know anything about it. I'm going to listen to music on the way home. I'm going to avoid the game completely. Right when we get back in the locker room, they go, holy crap, it's 13-3. And I was like, what? 13-3? Who? And they're like, the Lions. And I was like, the Lions are winning at halftime?
And the three has to stick out to you at that point, right? Like, how in the world are they holding Tom Brady to 3 points?
You know what? I was so just lost in the rapture at that point that I was like, the Lions are winning at halftime. Don't know what that feeling's like. But yes, how in the world has the Lions defense managed to keep Tom Brady and the Patriots offense to 3 points? Like, all of that, I don't know if it's replicable, Chris. I don't know if it's something that the Lions can do for the next week after week. I mean, who are we kidding? Lions are going 14-2, but I think that there were some things that were promising in this game, but like Jeremy said, like there's still some things that kind of like reared their ugly heads, but I think it's important right now that we celebrate some of the good.
No, I agree. And like, I mean, we're going to celebrate, I think, individual players. I just want to ask you guys two questions by way of, though, of like how much we give to Lions here. The first one's simple enough. I said on Toledo Radio, 60-40. 60% of this was on the Patriots being bad. 40% of this was on the Lions being good. And again, when I say the Lions are being good, I think they game planned this perfectly. You know, we talked a lot about Belichick knows how Patricia thinks. I think it was the other way around. Patricia seemed to figure out how Belichick was thinking. I don't know. Like, I don't know if I can say Belichick was out coached, but like the game plan the Lions had, they knew the weaknesses of the Patriots. They knew the weaknesses of their defense. They knew the weaknesses of their offense, and they exploited both perfectly. But I don't know if you, like, unless you're like really game planning well for everything else, that's not really replicable. And that's why I say 60-40. The Patriots just look bad, but there's still enough that gives you some hope about the Lions. So percentages, what do you guys, what do you think, Jeremy? How much on one side or the other?
That's really an impossible question to answer, but I kind of like your percentages there, 60-40. I know Lions fans aren't going to want to hear the narrative of this game being that the Patriots are horrible, because they absolutely knew that was what was going to happen if the Lions won this game, is that it's not the Lions won the game, it's the Patriots lost the game. But that's not a very good Patriots team right now, and I'm not saying they won't be at the end of the regular season. I think they'll be fine. I think they'll still win their division, because I'm not a believer in the Dolphins. I don't care what their record is right now, or the Jets, or the other team that I'm forgetting, the Bills. So, but I mean, this is a team that doesn't have any offensive weapons outside of Gronk. And we always hear Matt Patricia's game plan is take away the biggest threat. And so the Lions absolutely made it their priority to take away Gronk, whether it was with rookie Tracy Walker or newly added Deshaun Shedd or a little bit of Quandre Diggs mixed in. But they were clearly making that a priority. I mean, the Lions had at least 5 defensive backs on the field like 80% of the time in this game. If you look at the snap counts, they're insane. There are barely any defensive linemen in the game at all times. it was very interesting to see just a very specific defensive game plan against the Patriots, and my God, it worked. So there definitely is credit there. What I'm trying to say there is there's definitely credit due to Patricia and his game planning. I think you nailed it there. But you look at this Patriots defense, where do they have any strengths? I mean, they were down 3 starters because of injury. You know, Derek Rivers was basically playing in his first NFL game. I don't know where there's a strength on that Patriots defense. So the Lions ran over them, and they absolutely should have.
Yeah, yeah. Like, again, in hindsight, a lot of it was like I was just scared of the Patriots name. And I think, though, like, now that you look at the only thing that surprised me from that game was that Tom Brady played as bad as he did. So, Ryan, how much of this is Lions being good? How much of this is the Patriots being bad?
Because I'm super well equipped with numbers, I almost got on here and I was like, I'm just going to make it 55-55. And I was like, that's 110.
You know what? Both teams played hard.
Both teams play hard, man. I think that your percentages are pretty good, actually. Like the 60-40 is pretty spot on for me. And I think I really do buy into what you're saying, Chris. Like the idea of the evil empire coming into Detroit and Bill Belichick having the upper hand on Patricia seemed like it was just a foregone conclusion.
In bounce back games too is disgusting.
Yeah, and I mean, all the things that were just seemingly like trending in that direction, like we should have known better that like something was up, because like once the line moved to like 6.5, like it just seemed like there was too much going on. Like I'm just still trying to come to terms with, like, we'll get into numbers, but the Lions ran the ball 33 times and Stafford threw it 36 times. Like, if there's anything to be more proud of in this game, it's just that the Lions, like you said, like they game planned the absolute, you know, shit out of this game. So kudos to them. I think it was our own guy, right? It was Monser who said, the Lions, they employed a pretty interesting strategy by ignoring the first 2 games of the season and game planning for the Patriots.
Pretty much. All right. The next question, and real quick, because we're out of time and we got to move on to individual performances. How different is this game if Josh Gordon plays for the Patriots? Because I think Ryan's onto, I mean, you guys are onto something there when you say, like, you know, it's all, I'm sorry, Jeremy said it, but like, it's all about taking away the biggest weapon. And like, if Josh Gordon's playing, suddenly you've got two weapons on the field. Like, again, the most surprising thing to me is Tom Brady just looked absolutely lost out there, like absolutely lost. I don't know how different that is if Josh Gordon plays.
I don't know. I mean, if we're talking about Josh Gordon 3 or 4 weeks with the Patriots, knows the offense and is healthy, maybe it's a different story. I mean, but Darius Slay was out there doing nothing all game. He got targeted 3 times, got a pick. He probably would have shadowed Gordon, I imagine. Speed versus speed there. And I'm not saying Darius Slay shuts Josh Gordon out, but I think he makes it so, you know, nothing huge is going to happen, even if we're talking about a comfortable Josh Gordon in the Patriots system. But it certainly would have made their job at least a little bit tougher.
Okay. All I'll say to that, but then I'm going to let Ryan get the last word real quick, is that Josh Gordon, even blind, would have been better than Cordarrelle Patterson, I think. Ryan, how much of a difference?
Negligible, like zero difference. I don't think it would have made a lick of difference if Josh Gordon played. And I say that because, you know, to go along with what Jeremy was saying, you know, if this is healthy Josh Gordon, who's been with the Patriots for longer than since, you know, a 1 week ago from when we're recording this, like he literally signed with the Patriots on Monday. You know, we've heard enough about like how difficult it is for like receivers to adjust to like what the Patriots do. So I think even with how talented Josh Gordon is, I don't think he would have made a marked difference.
All right. Well, we're going to quickly go to the timeout. When we come back, we're going to shift focus completely on the Lions and talk about some of the outstanding performances. We're finally going to get to Ryan's big, beautiful boy, Kerryon Johnson. He's been wanting to talk about him for a while now, and I'm going to let him just unwind talking about Kerryon. We will be right back on the PODcast.
It's maybe the night that my dreams might let me know. All the stars are closer. All the stars are closer.
Tell me what you gonna do to me. Confrontation ain't nothing new to me. You could bring a bullet, bring a sword, bring a morgue, but you can't bring the truth to me.
Alexa, play Kendrick Lamar and SZA.
Okay.
Maybe the night that my dreams might let me know. All the stars are closer.
With Amazon Music, a voice is all you need. Get tens of millions of songs. Download the Amazon Music app today.
We are back on the Pride of Detroit BOD cast, still playing Toto's Africa all night long as the Detroit Lions whip the New England Patriots 26-10. Let's start with the man of the hour. This was the Kerryon Johnson coming out game. If nothing else, then it seems the Lions put him out there explicitly to get 100 yards, over 100 yards. He got exactly 101 yards, and then they took him out of the game. Like, see, he didn't do anything else after that. Ryan, talk about the man from Auburn.
Well, you know what? I think it was a wise move by the Lions to do that because you got to protect the number. You got to protect the three digits. Like, you can't let anything funky happen.
They knew we had already published the article that Kerryon Johnson broke the record, finally had done it. And if they had gone back on it, it would have made us look like fools. And they clearly have our identity in mind. So I appreciate that from the Lions.
I mean, jeez. Totally. I mean, if anything, the Lions organization serves us.
Yes, absolutely.
I think that's the type of relationship that we have with the organization for sure. I mean, Jeremy, they set you up with Slows.
They set me up with Slows. How else can you explain that Toto's Africa has won Song of the Game 3 times in a row? At Ford Field so far.
We can't even talk about that at the start. They've been playing Toto's Africa at Ford Field.
Yes, every week they do a little poll of the audience. They put up 4 songs, vote on your favorite, and Toto's Africa has won every single time so far. I guess that makes them 4-0.
And it's a great season. Yeah, it's always cool too because like the 3 other songs are like really contemporary.
Yeah.
So it's like songs that are like currently on the radio or currently in rotation, but Africa just keeps on reigning supreme because, as I said, the Lions organization serves us.
Kerryon Johnson did that 100 yards on 16 carries.
Look at Chris bringing it back to football. I love Chris.
I know. I'm just amazed at that though. 16 carries. Blunt had 16 as well. He did like half of that.
And I'm not even sure like, I mean, I'd really have to dig into the numbers and I haven't really had the chance to today, but like what kind of running was LeGarrette Blount doing in terms of like down and yardage to go. But I did notice something that was really interesting, a stat about Kerryon Johnson is that he's been utilized 7 times on 3rd down. And that's as many times as any Lions running back was last year. Like Theo Riddick was used that many times on 3rd down. Like in terms of like a receiving or a running play. Pretty interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, I can't speak highly enough of what Kerryon Johnson did last night. He's the most exciting running back in Detroit since Barry. I'm sorry, Javid Best. I'm sorry, Reggie Bush. This guy is doing it all right now. The only thing he really needs to improve on is pass protection, and the Lions already have a guy that can do that, so I don't care. His lateral quickness, his ability to find the hole is so much better than anyone else on the roster. And he's showing it in the run game. He's showing it in the pass game. Every single offensive snap, I was watching the sidelines to see if he was coming in or coming out because I wanted him on the field, selfishly. I know it's still early, and I know the Lions still really like LeGarrette Blount a lot. But, man, Kerryon Johnson is the most exciting player on this team right now. And I'm super excited about it. I did a deeper dive into the numbers because, like you said, Chris, 100 yards on 16 carries is no easy feat, especially when his longest run was 15 yards. And so I did a deep dive. The only people have gotten 100 yards rushing on 16 or fewer carries 18 times since 2014. But almost every single time that had to be, there was a 30-plus yard run to kind of bounce up those numbers. Kerryon was efficient every single time he touched the ball. Every single time. I found the stat, and I hate to repeat the site a little too much, but Football Outsiders considers a successful play if you get 45% of the yards on first down, 60% of the yards needed on second down, or convert a third or fourth down. 10 out of Kerryon Johnson's 11 first carries were all considered successful by that metric. That is insane.
And I want to impress again that this is, again, not a good defense that they tore up. So, like, yeah, that does take some of the luster off it. But, yeah, sure, it's definitely a stability right now. And the Lions had their balanced offense. They finally had their balanced offense. I think they called as many runs as they did passing plays. Like, same number, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was really close. Like, I mean, the Lions had 33 carries to 36 pass attempts. But I fudged that stat a little bit. The actual stat is that Kerryon Johnson has 7 third down touches this year. There was no running back outside of Theo Riddick who had more than 7 in all of 2017. So, like, I think that goes a lot to show how trusting the Lions already are. It's the third game of the season. They already trust him on third down, whether it's him in pass protection or catching the ball out of the backfield or even running the football. They just have a lot of trust in him already, and they need to have as much trust as possible. Like, going forward, like, if you're talking about like a baseline, like Kerryon Johnson should be touching the ball at least 15 times a game, like in some way, shape or fashion. And I know they have Theo Riddick and I know they have LeGarrette Blount, but like this guy, like he breaks arm tackles because his lower body is just so strong. Mm-hmm. Like it seems like the first guy who touches him, like, just does not bring him down. And that's so valuable, and it's so refreshing, is it not, to see a Lions offense that is more balanced, like Chris said. But, you know, my stat of the night, absolutely without a shadow of doubt, like, this was the stat that caused me to go on a little French Stewart, Harry Solomon, Third Rock from the Sun, little tweet storm. But the time of possession, the Lions had the ball for 39 minutes and 15 seconds, and the Patriots had it for 20 minutes and 45 seconds.
Yes, sir. That's what they did in 26. That's what they did when they were winning back in like 2016, too. They'll just strangle the life out of you when they can hold on to the ball.
That's almost 2-1. Like, no, there are going to be very few teams, as long as you're not turning the ball over, very few teams that are going to be winning football games when you're out possessing the ball 2-1. And that's what the running game is going to do. You know what? My big takeaway from week 3 is, thank God Ron Prince is gone. Thank God.
Yep. Where is he now? I think he's coaching. I think he's like doing coordinator.
I don't want to talk about it.
I want to mention
Prince. That's right.
Offensive analyst for the University of Michigan football team, whose offense has been so wonderful so far through these college weeks.
Delicious. Delicious, delicious, delicious. All right, we talked 8 minutes about the running game. I never thought I would say that in a segment here on the Pride of Detroit Podcast. Let's finally talk about some of the receiving threats in this game. Marvin Jones, Golden Tate, both had 69 yards. Say it, Ron.
Nice.
Double nice.
Nice.
But I've got to say, I was really impressed with Kenny Golladay, too. I don't know. What did you guys think? Well, what impressed you from the passing here? Because, like, I mean, I want to give some accolades to Stafford, but at the same time, there was still a little bit of that Stafford that I just hate, like, just kind of the lazy underarm slings. And, you know, he had one interception, but still, like, there's some out of Stafford that just looks like it's going to be a problem down the road. But it's been better than past weeks. I'll give him that, too.
I want Jeremy to get into it, but real quick, just to your point, Chris, you said we talked about the running game for like 8 minutes. I want to talk about the running game for like 80 minutes.
I could talk about it some more too, man. I really could. I'm excited about it. But I gave the wide receivers an A in this game. I think each one showed why they're valuable. We had a lot of Golden Tate yak in this game. I think like 70% of his yards was after the catch in this game.
He's on that yak.
you mentioned Kenny Galladay, who had fewer yards than the other two guys, but 6 catches, 53 yards. Like that's, I think we're starting to learn that's going to be his low in each week. Like that's him at his quietest.
He got targeted 7 times. That's more than Marvin Jones did. Like yeah. Jones had some long, that Jones had a deep ball thrown to him, but like Jones got 6 targets, Tate 8, Galladay 7. So like, yeah, for all of them about neck and neck.
That's a very even split. And that's why I'm very excited about this team is they might not have any tight end threats whatsoever, but these three are a great three-headed monster. And man, that Stafford to Marvin Jones play was just a thing of beauty. I can watch that play all day because I know the Patriots safety just makes a big mistake, and I've watched the play about 15 times now, and I'm still not sure what he was biting on, but it was just like designed so perfectly. It got Marvin Jones wide open. Stafford had all the time in the world with the rollout, and he laid a perfect pass on him, and that's something that I think Lions fans were dying to see after last week when the Marvin Stafford connection was just missing some sort of wiring between the two, but it was in full effect on Sunday night, and that's something that is definitely relieving to see because they were so much fun to watch last year.
All right, and now on to the defense, and two names immediately pop out to me, Ryan. And of course, yeah, Slay popped out. I was with some people, they didn't even realize Slay was playing at first, but I think that's more speaking to the idea that, Slay was kind of it was late news that we even start in this game. And then, yeah, he got, targeted 3 times, I think we said earlier. 3 times, and one of those times it turns into an interception, like a huge interception late in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So he's definitely a name there. But then the other one is Eli Harold, who got both of the Lions sacks in this game.
Without a doubt. And the thing about Eli Harold is, let me get off this awful joke real quick. He wasn't a really heralded player.
I'm leaving.
When the Lions got him in the trade from San Francisco, we thought like, okay, this would just be like a rotational guy. He'll be Devin Kennard's backup. It gives the Lions a little bit more depth on the edge when it comes to pass rushing. But what Harold has done is he's really put on a lot of pressure in like limited amount of snaps. And I think even the bigger story here is that Kerry Hyder and Ezekiel Ansah both being inactive on game day, but the Lions pass rush not really missing a whole lot. You know, they still got some production out of Kennard. They 2 sacks from Eli Harold. There's other players that are getting things done along this defensive line that everybody was, you know, very concerned about. But at the same time, like that level of concern, like shouldn't dissipate at all. Cause we're still operating under this assumption that, you know, the Lions probably 40% good. The Patriots like 60% bad. You know, the Patriots were missing their first round pick, Isaiah Wynn, who tore his Achilles, you know, no more Nate Solder. You know, this Patriots offensive line is pretty, you know, reworked, from a year ago. So they're probably still working out a lot of the, you know, problems that they haven't quite, you know, figured out yet. But it's encouraging that the Lions are able to manufacture pressure in a way that they weren't able to with Terrell Austin.
And here's the guy that you haven't mentioned that I think we really need to talk about. Romeo Okwara, the guy who was active instead of Kerry Hyder, the guy that's basically been playing in Ezekiel Ansah's spot. This dude played 83% of the snaps. That is 35% more than any other defensive lineman in this game. 35% more than Deshaun Hand. 40% more than Ayshon, 50% more than Sylvester Williams, 55% more than Ricky Jean-Francois. And he was the second highest graded player by Pro Football Focus on the Lions defense.
And you know what this is too, Jeremy? It's like, this is also the player that everybody was so up in arms over because it was, well, they got rid of Anthony Zettel. He was maybe the best player on the Lions defensive line from start to finish last season. What is Matt Patricia thinking he's doing? We've definitely given Matt Patricia his fair share of criticism on this podcast, but like, this was clearly the right move.
Yeah. I mean, credit him and Bob Quinn. This is a guy that fits exactly what the Lions, I almost said the Patriots, are looking for. And my God, like, I honestly, I've only watched the game live when I was there at the game. I haven't watched a replay of it. I'm going to go in tonight or tomorrow morning and just watch Romeo Okwara in this game because I'm surprised by his PFF grade. I'm surprised by seeing how often he was out there because I thought the Lions' pressure was just kind of so-so on Monday night and Sunday night. Brady did have a lot of time, and I think the Lions' coverage stood up, and that's why they were able to get a couple sacks from their linebacking crew. But let's also give credit to the linebacking crew because we've been really hard on them all season. But they're the ones generating the pressure. They're the ones that have put quarterbacks on their back. And I think they have, what, like 80% of the Lions' sacks so far? Ezekiel Ansah has one. Does anyone else on the defensive line have one? I'm not sure.
I don't like silence, so I'm not going to let you pose a hard question to the crowd. What we are going to do is I think we're going to put the kibosh in that. And like I think what we're going to do next, we're going to take a break here. We come back. I think I want to look around the NFC North. There's really, I mean, we could keep talking about this game all along, but I think it's important now to put this game into context because, again, like we gave our takes early on about how much this was on the Steelers being bad. How much was, I mean, I said Steelers, Patriots being bad. How much was on Lions being good? We've brought out the star players. Now I want to put this into context as the Lions try to look forward. And I hate to look forward, but we're going to do it. Especially with the weekend that was in the NFL and particularly the NFC North. Stick around, PODcast comes back. PODcast in the North. I don't know why people really like this division or like really are gung-ho about this division. Like even when we're doing the pod, like, our Football Fights podcast, everyone was all like, yeah, NFC North. Yeah, yeah. In ways I don't think people do with a lot of other divisions out there. But whatever. Let's talk about the NFC North.
Well, we talk about the NFC North, but like, would we be super opposed to just going back to calling it the NFC Central?
I mean, I don't want Tampa Bay in it anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, okay, I think I said on the radio today, and I think your take is still right, Ryan. Like, I don't know. We're sitting here waiting for Monday Night Football to happen. And I mean, depending on what happens here, and I hate to put this out like after Monday Night Football's done, but it's not inconceivable after this year that Jameis Winston might have to go be filling out an application to go play in the XFL.
I mean, it's not. No, I can't convince myself that that's going to happen. He'll end up on an NFL roster, but at the same time, this is the Ryan Fitzpatrick train. Beep, this beep. Is what he does. He plays good, gets a contract.
I can't wait till he throws four interceptions tonight and we're going to have to put this out.
Yeah, no, that's quite possible too. I mean,
I just brought balance back to it though, Jeremy. I evened it out.
Yep. Well, I mean, I think we kind of had omens that this week was going to be weird when the Browns got their first win over the since 2016 over the Jets. You know, the Jets squad that had like completely demolished the Lions to start the season on Monday Night Football. And as I said, transitive property meant that the Lions hadn't won since December 2016. Now that's on to the Patriots.
You're
stink now. It's going to pass along like a championship belt, except it's going to be a loser belt of stink.
I just like Sunday alone was such a wave of emotions. Because basically Sunday morning starts out with this bombshell from Schefter that the Lions, again, in embarrassing fashion, tried to trade for Rob Gronkowski. Gronkowski says, I'd rather quit football than play for the Lions. And then everyone publishes their reports. And then after 30 minutes after that, Sheffer's like, oh, by the way, when he said he'd rather retire, he was just talking about any team, not just the Lions. And by then, everyone was like, oh, God, the Lions are embarrassing. They're horrible. No one wants to play for us. All the players are retiring.
Even with that in mind, I had people asking me, like, trying to tell me, it's like, look, if it had been to the Rams, he would have considered it. And I don't know what I believe about that, because I do think he's kind of weird enough they would, like, just play with Brady. But, yeah, I don't want to get too much into that. All I'll say is, like, again, a lot of people, though, after the Patriots-Lions game, making jokes about Gronk's 1,000-yard stare, being like, damn, I could be playing for the Lions. Damn.
Right. But yeah, then we go into the 1 p.m. games. We see the Vikings go down early on the Bills. You're like, oh, whatever. The Vikings are going to come back.
Holy crap, they got demolished by the fucking Bills.
And then, yeah, it just kept getting worse. And you're like, what is happening? Why is Red Zone only showing me Bills touchdowns? Where are the Vikings touchdowns in between these? Oh, there aren't any? Oh, they're getting shut out by the Bills?
At home?
It did look like the Bills showed up for a football game in Milwaukee and the Vikings didn't. And the Bills were just winning against scrubs.
Josh Allen is hurdling Anthony Barr? We are in bizarro world, and we were for the rest of the day. Weird things were happening all over the place.
Any takers on the theory that Vontae Davis was a sacrificial lamb? Like, he did this to really light a fire underneath the rest of the Bills roster.
Maybe.
You picked the right week to do it.
Yep. Giants finally get a win over the Texans, who look atrocious as hell. I mean, what's up with Deshaun Watson? He played out of his mind, but still.
Overrated.
You know what? I'm not going to toot my own horn, but I'm going to toot my own horn, okay? So when I came out with my fantasy quarterback ranking article, I had Deshaun Watson pretty down. He was like average draft position. People were taking him as like the second quarterback off the board, which I thought was absolute lunacy, because the guy did it for 5 games. And hey, newsflash, the Houston Texans offensive line, really bad. Like, really bad. Bad. Like, zoink, Scoob. Like, it's bad.
Now let's talk about the inverse of that, which is the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, who is the truth.
Stop, I'm sweating. I'm getting flustered. My cheeks are getting red.
Did you see that shit he
my
did?
My beautiful boy. Like, my beautiful boy.
Rodgers-esque. And Garoppolo is now apparently done for the year, too. So that sucks for the 49ers.
Man, dude. Rubbing my chest right now.
About Patty Mahomes. About Patty Mahomes.
God, he is it, like...
It's almost like we're talking about basketball playoffs right now, because...
We are all Enos Kanter in here.
Can I just pose a question about Patty Mahomes real quick?
Please do.
Is he the greatest quarterback of all time?
See, people were like, oh, you know what? People were like, oh, they're going to get footage on Patrick Mahomes. He's going to come back down to earth. I don't think so, man. He has that athleticism and that strength. He's going to have to eventually make adjustments. But I trust him to make those goddamn adjustments.
Like, I don't know why anybody didn't read between the lines. Like, can we talk about the Kansas City Chiefs, like, offseason real quick? Because not only did they go out and they got Sammy Watkins, who's looking like, you know, he's at least healthy and he's playing and he's doing things. So you add Sammy Watkins, you have Tyreek Hill, you have Travis Kelce, you have Kareem Hunt, you have maybe the best assembly of, you have the best assembly of weapons maybe in the NFL. And during the offseason, Andy Reid, who established coach, has been around the block quite a few times, decides, I'm going to trade my veteran quarterback because I think Patrick Mahomes is ready. I think that should have been like, okay, I'm going to trust Andy Reid because he's a pretty good judge of talent. Like, I don't...
And I mean, we also saw him fleece Washington to do that trade, too.
Yeah, well, hey, I mean, kudos to Washington. They just laid the smack down on the Packers. We'll get to that in a second.
This deep without mentioning the Packers loss.
We're going to get to them in a second to cap off the NFC North, them and the Bears. I want Ryan to finish his thought, though.
You know why we're not talking about him yet? Because you said those two magic words, baby. Patrick Mahomes.
You still need to rub your nipples a little more. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. I said chest. Let's keep it PG. But anyways, so like, like, people should have been giving the benefit of the doubt that Patrick Mahomes was going to be ready. Everybody ran their little silly stories about how many interceptions Patrick Mahomes was throwing in training camp and how he looked kind of iffy in the preseason. Shut your mouths. 13 touchdowns through 3 weeks.
And I know I said, when you see it. And I know we said we were going to move on to talking about the Packers, but I'll put them aside for a second and talk about another NFC team, which is that, once again, speaking of chest rubbing, all the Bears fans cringing. That's all I have another Bears fan here in LA, and all he could do watching Patrick Mahomes was like, we passed over Patrick Mahomes for Mitchell Trubisky. We passed over baby. Patrick Mahomes for this mess. My friend is completely off the Bears wagon, even though the Bears won 16-14 in Arizona. But it did not look pretty, and Mitchell Trubisky does not look pretty.
Do we think that the Bears would be in the first? Here's a really good question, and I think it's legitimate. And
I mean, they're first in the North just by early season, but yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, yeah, he's I mean, the Bears are first in the NFC North.
Stop saying that.
I know. But hold on. But doesn't that kind of mean that the Lions are too, though, because we own them?
Oh, you know what?
Good point.
I thought about that.
I don't know. I think it's a valid point. But here's the question. Now, there's so many players on an NFL roster. Like, it's hard to say that one player makes such an impact. But would the Bears be in first place if it wasn't for Khalil Mack?
No, absolutely not.
Isn't that insane? I hate the Raiders.
The Raiders? Yeah. I hope the Raiders go.
Can I read? I want to read Khalil Mack just his quick box score. I know we said we don't like reading box scores. He got 3 QB hits, 2 sacks, a tackle for loss, 5 tackles total. Like,
forced a fumble again for the third week. In a row.
Like, yeah. he was a force for Chicago.
He has a sack and a forced fumble in 3 straight games. That's insane alone. Insane.
The last person who did that. Last person who did that was Khalil Mack in 2016, right?
Yep.
Yep. But apparently you can't, it's hard to find good pass rushers, according to John Gruden.
It's hard. It's hard to trade franchise players. It's hard to do it, you know? But you just got to do it when you're trying to find a pass rush.
I mean, there's so many other places we could go. I'm looking at the time here, and I want to reserve time for our piece de resistance at the top of this. Like, I mean, what else is there to say? The Titans beat the Jaguars. Neither team looked really good. What the hell was going on there? But hey, man, sometimes you're just going to be the Jags, I guess. Battle for LA. Rams still look insanely scary, and I'm still terrified when they come to play in Detroit.
Yeah,
like, not talking about it.
Sweating.
Really, you know what? An interesting little subplot to that, though. Aqib Talib gonna be out for at least a month with some kind of like bad like ankle sprain, and then Marcus Peters has like a calf strain. Like, those are two guys that they like really count on. Like, you know, this is the problem. Like, when you invest so much in like star players at marquee positions, like those are your top two cornerbacks. Like,
yep.
If they're missing like a significant amount of time, that makes everybody else's job a little bit harder. So, I mean, the Rams were able to do really well last year because their star players were healthy. And, you know, for the most part, the injury bug didn't bite them too bad. But, you know, the injury bug bites everybody at some point.
Yep. Cowboys took a trip up to Seattle and ends like most trips up to Seattle go very poorly. And then Miami, like Miami's 3-0. But once I have to read off their opponents here, the Titans, the Jets and the Raiders.
The Jets are pretty good. They beat the Lions the first week of the season. So,
Jesus Christ.
Can we talk about the Packers losing yet?
Yes. Okay. We finally made it through. Let's talk Packers. Washington 31, Packers 17. And the big story once again out of this is, poor Clay Matthews. Poor Clay Matthews getting flagged for a non-egregious hit. I don't care. You can call me a fan. I don't care.
And he's worked up a tab, all right? Like, yeah, he's now paying off his tab from, like, 8 years ago.
We said before the show that, like, now that we don't really have Ndamukong Suh to kick around, I think the dirty player crown falls to Clay Matthews. And, yeah, it's time for desserts.
And to be clear, what he's getting flagged for is total bullshit, but I don't feel an ounce of it.
This is the smallest goddamn violin I can find.
But I mean, I think, you know, if we want to look past the national narrative and actually do a little bit of analysis on this game, a lot of people were expecting this Packers defense to be a lot better this year, with all the additions in the secondary and, you know, healthy Clay Matthews.
Old ass Adrian Peterson averaged 6.3 yards, 2 touchdowns. He had a 41 yard run in this game. Like, old ass Adrian Peterson ran all over Green Bay. I had him on my bench and I was furious.
I really wanted to slip in a Lee Corso not so fast, my friend, when Jeremy was listening off all the upgrades they made at defense, because can we, you know what? I'd never like to see players get hurt, but it's really gonna, I think it's really gonna affect the Packers not having Muhammad Wilkerson.
Yep.
Really is.
Yeah.
I even said that when I was looking at the record, like, you guys are going to hate, the Lions fans are going to hate facing Muhammad Wilkerson. Him gone is it's a huge blow.
Absolutely. And I mean, looking at the other side of the ball, Aaron Rodgers threw the ball a ton, did not get a ton of yards, only averaged 6.0 yards per attempt. He doesn't look bad, but this Packers offense that everyone is so fearful of after the comeback they made against the Bears in the opening week.
Their leading receiving producer in this game was something named Geronimo Allison. Vaunted Jimmy Graham was productive. Five receptions for 45 yards, but still, like,
look at Randall Cobb. Like, Randall Cobb's essentially supposed to be maybe their best receiver threat. Targeted 11 times and he caught the ball 4 for 23. Yep.
Well, I think, you know, one of the videos that's really making the rounds today on Twitter, like this afternoon, was Aaron Nagler. He works for, I think, Cheesehead TV, but he put out a video of Jason Spriggs just absolutely getting bull rushed to by Ryan Kerrigan. And, like, you know what? I don't want to say the Lions have a pass rush, but if the Lions can get pressure on Aaron Rodgers, like, it changes the game.
Sacked 4 times that game.
Yeah.
Yep, it's going to be interesting. It's really going to be interesting. The Lions in 2 weeks could be playing in Lambeau. They're going to get out of their system early, first week of October, before it gets too damn cold. So now we'll see.
Before we wrap things up, are the Lions in the NFC North race? Can we officially say that now after
that's
bizarre
the thing,
week, like, in the NFL?
Because that was the thing that's scaring me. Like, since we were talking about just ghosts, the fact that both the Packers and the Vikings lost made me feel like this is a perfect place for the Lions to have an opportunity to gain ground and completely squander it to the Patriots. Right. And they didn't. And instead, they're now 1-2. And again, in the standing, the Bears are on top, but not for long. They can't be for long. Like, the way they're playing, it's just going to be a slogfest, because Minnesota looks, I mean, they're, I don't know how to, like, they look like they're struggling right now. Like, they're struggling. They struggled with the Packers, and they really struggled with the Bills. And they have to play on the road the Rams and the Eagles back-to-back. So they're going to be down in a hole to really start up this year. Because I don't think they're better than either of those teams right now. With all the struggles Philadelphia has, I don't think Minnesota wins either of those games. And then Green Bay, we've pointed out all their problems. So I don't know what the hell is going to happen in the North. I really don't. I mean, people were saying this might be the best, one of the better divisions in the NFL. I don't know about that. It's going to be the fucking messiest, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel pretty confident in saying that I think what happened to both the Packers and the Vikings this week it's not representative of those teams. I think what happened last week when they played each other, that was a slogfest. They went to overtime. You know, they knocked each other around pretty good, and that was an important game, and they come out with a tie.
Do you think, is that because you think that is a tie with the new overtime clock? Do you think that would have been a tie if we had the old over, if it was more than 10 minutes?
I don't know. Maybe not. But I think my greater point is that I think that game may have taken a lot out of both of those teams, and the turnaround, maybe there was just a little bit of a hangover. You know, maybe. From 1 week to the next week, I think there's a little bit of a hangover, because I don't think Washington is a better football team than the Packers. And I know that the Buffalo Bills are not better than the Minnesota Vikings. So, like, we mentioned this off air, but as impressive as the Lions beating the Patriots at home the way that they did, it still wasn't more shocking than what the Buffalo Bills did to the Minnesota Vikings in Minnesota.
No, no.
I don't think we're going to get a more shocking result the rest of the year.
No, be hard. Well, I don't know.
Hold on to your butts, man.
Hold on to your butts.
That's all I can say after 3 weeks of NFL football is, like, I once again, it feels like 2016, what we were doing for all of 2017 again. I have no goddamn clue what's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, and that just goes to show you, like, how much maybe next year we'll learn not to panic after 1 or 2 weeks in the NFL, because the next week, maybe you're beating the best dynasty the NFL has ever seen.
Dude, but again, like, I don't understand it on the Lions side, and we've really got to get out of here. But I'll just say this, like, I don't understand the Lions side how you go 1 week from the Jets saying they knew all your signals to being able to pull off the perfect game plan against Bill Belichick with all the flaws and weaknesses that the Patriots had. Like, that was absolutely a winnable game for the Lions, but still, this team looked insanely bad after that Jets thing. And I think everything we were saying at that time was justified. Like, everything went wrong in that first week. And I don't think any of it was an overreaction, because, like, we didn't really see how they'd climb out of this. And to be honest, like, it's one win, and I'm we'll see. We'll see. The Lions have some tough games up ahead too. Like, they've got to go on the road to the Cowboys and the Dolphins. They got to play the Seahawks and the Packers. And then they have that November slate, which looks like a murderer's row. Like, I don't know.
Honestly, that schedule doesn't scare me as much as it did a week ago.
I'd still be scared.
Cowboys don't look that good. The Dolphins, I don't believe in.
Oh,
Packers.
No. I'm not looking past Dallas, because there are some demons that the Lions need to exercise in the
world. We'll see about that. Let's take a break, and we're going to get onto the mailbag. We've been dying for this. Be right back in the Pride of Detroit PODcast. Mail time, hashtag AskPOD. As always, get your questions in. We will answer whatever. And just like the Shakira song. Thank you. That was awful.
Wow.
Jeremy, just for, as penance for that, do we have any reviews to read?
No, but I'm sure we're going to get like 10 5-stars after that beautiful rendition.
Ryan, would you like to leave a review right now?
Yeah, I would like to leave a review. My username is Patty Mahomes 6969 for life.
Hard nipples.
And the only thing I'd like to say is I think the host is really adequate, but great.
Thank you.
I will make a promise that I'm going to sing Shakira every week until we get a positive review. How about that?
Oh, I want to hear, what was the name of the, it's like something Madrid. That's always a good one.
I'd
like to hear you try to. Well, that's one of her ones in Spanish too. So have fun with that. We open the mailbag with Chris at Chris D. Gibbons. What is the best Lil Jon song?
It's undeniably Turned Down for What, because it's one. I feel like it's one that's actually his song, because his Monday night performance was the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life, because he doesn't have any, like, he doesn't sing hooks or anything. He's become a caricature of himself. So he's out there doing "Yeah" to open up the medley that he was doing, and he's just going, "Yeah, yeah, 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 yeah," and nothing, like, there's no other performers on stage. It's just him doing that, and it's the weirdest thing I've ever seen, because he's not doing any choruses, he's not doing any verses, he's just doing the fills for the entire 15 minutes. But Turned Down for What is the answer.
I think like within the past like 180 seconds on the podcast, we've gotten a Shakira impression and we've gotten a Lil Jon rendition from Jeremy. So I think it's time to shut this thing down and burn it.
Probably.
Too good. They're too perfect.
The answer to the question though is Get Low, right? Because hold on. Like, I'll let you get into what you want to say, Chris, but real quick, just from a teacher's perspective, like, and for you guys were also people who lived like through high school at a point in which like that song was popular.
Yep.
That song still gets played at high school dances. And I don't know how, because has anybody ever listened to the lyrics of that song? Okay.
I have heard in the past week, I need to send this to you, Ryan. There was a video of someone doing like an acapella with himself, like nine times over, singing to the windows, to the walls, to the
perfect.
I can't read the rest. And then there is also one of those incredibly white boy acoustic renditions of the song as well.
Of course,
I've heard that, and I've heard what's the other song?
Oh my god,
it's not by Lil Jon. Paranoid. But Get Low is, I think, the right answer here. That's all I was gonna say.
That acoustic version though is parodied so well by Atlanta in season 2. If anyone's a fan of Atlanta, you know what I'm talking about. But there's like a white girl doing a like a coffee store version of
the only thing perfect about those YouTube videos of white boys with the fucking guitar doing songs like Paranoid and Get Low is right at the end of the YouTube thing. They come up and it's like, hi, you know, it's so great to do this stuff. Thank you guys so much for checking out this song. Be sure
click
to like and
like
subscribe. Yeah, and check out these great people, man. Tyler here. I just love all the positive vibes I've been getting every YouTube video, man. Every time without fail.
They definitely make the heart with their fingers too.
Yes.
Love
yes.
you guys.
God, yes.
Does YouTube still operate like that, or is that just how YouTube was in 2009?
I don't know.
Good question. You know what the most infuriating thing is too? I saw like a thrashcore band do that with Taylor Swift, Your Name. And they did the same thing after the credits. Like, this is a metal band and they're still doing the white boy. Hi guys, it's great that you're here. Check out our stuff. Come on, man.
I'm just all upset right. that we've come to Taylor Swift. Can we move on?
Yes. Okay. One more thing on Lil Jon before we move away from it, from Josh LaFon, enemy of the show. Lil Jon halftime Aretha national anthem.
Aretha.
Oh boy.
Jesus, oh boy. Man.
Sorry. Can I say that over again? Because I felt like it's super disrespectful.
Try yourself.
Ready? Aretha Franklin national anthem, like, it goes without saying, right? Like, yep. It was actually good. A lot of people thought it was actually bad, and they're actually dumb.
Insanely dumb. Next question here is from Ryan Collins at Shafty Von Hack. We're getting all the usual suspects out of the way first. If pizza bagels are a thing, why aren't bagel pizzas? I am glad you asked, Ryan, because the worst thing I saw over the last couple of weeks was that there is a place in New York, I'm pretty sure in Chelsea, which makes it even worse, called Lions, Tigers, and Squares, and they do Detroit-style pizza. Yes, New York Jets fans who are shitting all over my five questions, it is a real style of pizza. No, it doesn't come from the garbage. Fuck you, you greasy little Goombas out there. But they do Detroit-style pizza, and they have a pizza at their place, which they apparently got from Trenton, New Jersey. And these goddamn, and I can say this because I'm Italian, these Guidos out there and said, hey, we were thinking Trenton, Detroit, what's not to love? Well, I'll tell you what's not to love. It's a pizza with a mustard base, which they pile on corned beef and what's the crappy pickled thing again?
Sauerkraut.
Yeah. Mustard, corned beef, sauerkraut, and then the brick cheese on top on a Detroit pizza. I guess that's technically a bagel pizza right there.
Listen, I will stand for the Reuben any day of the week, but leave it the fuck out of my pizza. I would rather eat that pizza that the Comerica Park employee spit in than that piece of crap pizza. That is gross.
I've been wanting to get that off my chest for several weeks now on multiple fronts about the Detroit pizza and the mustard pizza.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think we were going to do a rage corner this week, but I, you know, Chris just had his platform. Also, this is why I'm just team wings over everything, because I don't have to deal with this nonsense.
Well, I'll tell you off the air. Actually, no, I'll just say it right here. Speaking of team wings, I need to ask you something, because we had a party foul when I was out in Pico Robertson with Rob Parker from Fox Sports One and a bunch of other USC buddies watching this game. What's the proper protocol when they when someone brings you your wings and it's only the drums? Because Rob was kind of a little miffed that we didn't really get a good ratio of like flats to drums. They like gave him like that he ordered like 8 wings and like 7 of them were drums.
Yeah, well, that's not right. And I'm not the type of person to send things back, but like I think I would make a comment about like, hey, like, do you think I could have got like a better ratio of like drums to flats? And I know most places usually charge more for flats just because it's better meat, but
yeah, like he said he's asked for like more flats before and they always tell him no, they can't do that. But for some reason someone's eating all those goddamn flats somewhere. They're giving him 7 drums.
And it's not Rob Parker. So I ended up on his plate.
Nope.
Maybe he should have married a better wing.
Okay. Okay.
Stop it.
Can we put the restaurant on blast? Or are you comfortable saying
No, because we're probably going to go back. And to be honest, Rob still likes it. It was just a weird thing that happened. And I just wanted the wing expert's take on it. That's all.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, it's disrespectful. And I totally understand why he felt miffed.
Next question, him from Mansoor Shaheen. Huh. Wonder where he's from. Do any of the guys in the pod have a favorite grocery store by any chance?
This is a dumb joke.
Why? Did I miss this?
This was during week one, and I've done everything I can to block that memory out of my brain. But the newbies at Pride of Detroit decided to
They were hazing the old guy. It was a reversal of roles.
It was reverse. It was reverse bullying. Like the hazing should not. That's not how it works. And I felt attacked. And Jeremy also fired me that night. But I'm still here.
I fired everyone that night. No. Long story short is Ryan screenshotted like his Twitter feed, and there was a promoted. Was it Trader Joe's tweet?
No, it was Whole Foods. But close Whole Foods.
And so everyone was just bashing him for following Whole Foods, which he wasn't actually following. It was a promoted tweet.
Thank you, Jeremy. See, at least somebody has my back.
All right, we got some more questions here, and I've got to give props to these two people. I'm going to read both their questions. They were sending us questions during the game itself, judging by the timestamps. Like, they're proactive. They want to get in here on this. Good for you guys. CJ at CJ Truthsayer, does this win mean that the Pats are going to end less than 500?
Wait, if he tweeted that during the game, that dude has balls. I don't care how much time was left on the clock. I was 11, not coming out.
So this was after the game. This was like this was at 11 p.m. Eastern. So
because number one rule of Twitter is don't tweet. Number two rule of Twitter is don't count out touchdown time.
But that's John Boyce. The third rule of Twitter is welcome to College Football Saturday.
Do you know what we didn't really talk about at all? Why did the Patriots just tuck it in at the end of the game when they were down by two scores?
Oh my God, I have no idea. They ran 3 straight draw plays. I'm like, okay, I get one. Maybe you're trying to catch them off guard and gain like a 30-yard pop right off the bat. But they just kept doing it. And I'm just like, wow, I've never seen a team give up like that.
I know. They literally quit.
And I think it led to some Lions fans, very cynical Lions fans thinking, and I saw some fans throw out this theory even before the game. Is Bill Belichick just going to throw this game for his friend?
Oh my God.
No. He's not Belichick's friend. I don't know what friends Belichick has, but it's not Patricia.
Belichick will stone cold walk right past a 3-year-old who's dying to touch his hand. He's not going to throw a football game.
He looked disgusted shaking Patricia's hand, man. Like, absolutely disgusted. Someone, Matt Euford, put out the joke, Collins, where it's like, just consummate professionals out there, and it looked like Belichick was going to stab him in the back.
Oh, yeah. Belichick just, I mean, cut off, hoodie and all, just ignored that plebeian like he was nothing. Like, are you kidding me? Like, do you think I'd waste my energy to stick my hand out to touch yours and show you a little humanity?
Monday Night Football update, not useful to anyone listening to this on podcast, but I'm sitting here watching, and Ryan Fitzpatrick hit a wide open receiver in the end zone. The Steelers are trash. All right.
Don't play fantasy football, kids.
The other question we had, like, on Sunday night, Trevor Parcella at TParse2, did Patricia's stock go up based on the challenge flag thrown alone? So I didn't even see him throw the flag on the broadcast until they showed the replay, like, you know, before they were going to break. Yeah. And he hucked that thing.
He did. And as someone who's been in training camp and practice all off season, I've seen him throw the ball. He likes to get into drills and throw it like a quarterback sometimes.
Dork.
He throws like a he throws like a dork. He throws like someone who is picking up a football for the first time. And so to see him like very athletically and very emphatically throw that red challenge flag out there, I'm like, whoa, why weren't you doing that in practice, bro? I was really impressed. But on the serious side, Trisha called a really smart timeout at the end of the first half. Very happy about that after I was not very happy about his time management last week. And it was actually a good time to challenge, too. So,
all right, digging in the comments on this one, we've got a few questions from the comments I want to take before we get out of here. Couch QB asking us, would you have been, we haven't even talked on this thing besides the quick rant we did during the NFC North segment that turned into more NFL everything. Would you have been happy if the Lions had traded for Gronkowski before the draft? How much draft capital would you have been okay with spending on him? I want to use this for another mini rage quarter because I saw so many Lions fans saying, I'm glad we didn't have Gronkowski because he's injury prone or whatever. Gronkowski is going to go down as like probably, I don't know, top five all time tight end. I don't know if he's better than Tony Gonzalez, but like he's up there. To say you don't want him just because he got hurt a couple times, like stop it. Get some help. Get some help, as Michael Jordan would say.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a tough situation here. Obviously, Gronkowski makes the team infinitely better, and he's a huge threat and would change the complete dynamics of this offense. And maybe they don't even go after Kerryon Johnson if they draft Rob Gronkowski, because I think it would at least cost him a second-round pick, right?
Well, bear in mind the time they didn't really have a contract on Gronkowski either.
Right, so he's essentially on a one-year deal. I think
I don't think you give anything more than a third rounder and maybe some other late draft capital up for him at that point. If it's just going to be a potential rental to try to sign him.
Yeah. I mean, the question is, is that worth it for the Patriots? Away Rob Gronkowski for a third? I don't think they do that.
Maybe if Rutgers still produces draft stock, I don't know.
It's really an interesting question. And It's an interesting scenario
maybe something in 2019. I don't know.
I mean, the Lions ended up spending a lot of their resources on offense anyways in the draft. So my initial thought, had it gone down, was be like, I think the Lions probably could have better used that draft pick for defense, but they didn't end up spending it on defense anyways. So it's hard to, you know, kind of play Captain Hindsight over here and say, you know, the Lions spent on offense anyway, so who cares? But I don't know. I just don't like kind of being the spotlight of embarrassment here where it's like, they couldn't get a trade done. Their tight end crew right now is...
No, I'm more saying because I'm pushing back because there are so many fans out there, the injury thing aside, but there are so many fans out here who have just adopted the 76ers view, Sam Hinkie view of the world. Trust the process is all about draft capital and salary cap space. It's not about going out there and getting the most electric players to ever play the game to make yourself good because you're just so goddamn worried you're going to give up, you know, second and third rounders. Like, stop it. Like, be excited for a big name. Like, be excited for a big name. I know you want to min-max it, but you know what? I'd rather be building up kind of like how the Rams are doing right now. Like, that's exciting to me.
But that it's dangerously flash in the pan, and you can
I don't care. But you know what? Well, you know what's also you know what's almost as likely to happen? You whiff on all your draft stuff anyway, and then you're just awful, and no one knows who your players are anyway. That happens more than just flash in the pan on large amount of signings, unless you are the team in Washington.
But Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia have both said like they're not looking to do that flash in the pan thing. They want long term.
It's not flash in the pan. It's not fucking flash in the pan.
It absolutely is.
A proven goddamn player. Shut the fuck up.
Watch. Look at what's happening with Seattle right now. Now that
Russell Wilson isn't on
that rookie contract anymore, they're fucked. Their defense
has nothing to do with going out and getting good players. That has nothing with going out.
Absolutely it does.
No, it doesn't, because they were trying to game the system. They're the end result of the process there.
No, because they didn't.
Anyway,
they didn't
next question here.
Graphics.
Yeah, whatever. You keep muttering. Next question here from South Detroit. Have you eaten at a Brazilian-style steakhouse?
I have eaten at a Brazilian-style steakhouse, but right now I'm eating popcorn. I just got back. What's up? You guys still going at it or what? The Brazilian style steakhouse that I ate at was when I was in Punta Cana, and it's nothing but good memories from when I was there. So,
thank you for listening to the Pride Detroit POD cast. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. Our main theme was produced by Ryan Shepherd. You can find him on Twitter and on SoundCloud at I am Brian Shepherd. IamBrianSHEPARD. Thanks a lot to him. Check out his stuff. He's been great. He gave us Victory Monday. So go check him out. That's I am Brian Shepherd. And thank you for everyone who keeps listening and makes us one of the greatest Lions podcasts possible. Y'all are awesome. See you, Star Side.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.